People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we take a look at the real electricity crisis with education and science writer Steve Miller.
Now that the electronic technology exists to begin to really coordinate all the infrastructure systems around the world, most of which were built with public money and taxpayer money, they intend to take these over and then to use them for speculative purposes. The use is not, the primary goal is not to produce any electricity. The primary goal is to produce capital so that they can reward their stock owners.
And an editorial from the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, addressing Women's History Month and the continuing struggle for justice and equality. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. California's electricity crisis has captured the attention of the nation and the world, but what is really going on here? What is this all about as deregulation spreads throughout the country from the Golden State? We're with Steve Miller, who's an education and science writer for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Steve, what's going on here? I mean, the situation keeps changing all the time, and there are so many aspects. When we're talking about this electricity crisis, what are we really talking about?
Well, before we get to the details of what's been going on, I think we need to look at it in a global context. The modern economy that we see pushing for globalization throughout the world is dominated by speculative capital. This is money which is invested to make more money, in essence, forms of legalized betting on the economy. And this is really the dominant thing that is currently driving this whole globalization phenomenon. In 1997, the Chicago Tribune pointed out that the global money markets trade $400 trillion a year. This is 25 times the amount needed to finance all of the world's trade and investment needs. So it's the use of money to make more money that is reorganizing and reconfiguring most of the world's systems. And this is a global march that is occurring everywhere. In 1997, the World Trade Organization opened up 94% of the world's telecommunications market. In 1 year, $600 billion worth of overall annual revenue passed into private corporate hands. In the United States, the electrical grids, including the Tennessee Valley Authority and all of the grids together, are estimated to be around $300 billion. The speculative capital definitely is aiming to take control of all of this. When we hear the word deregulation, nobody should be fooled. What this really means is privatization. And in various countries around the world, telecommunications, waters, railroad, electricity, even information and biological products are being privatized through the ideas of deregulation and so-called free market.
Well, you know, you bring up a really central and important point, and that is the use of language. And this thing that is happening regarding electricity is constantly called deregulation. But, you know, when you said that, it sometimes things are so simple and straightforward that when they're said, you go, oh, okay, deregulation doesn't mean anything other than privatization, is what we're seeing happening all around the planet.
Absolutely. If you look at California's crisis, it's important to understand what a regulated energy system was. Energy is currently publicly controlled in 2,000 cities across the country. The entire state of Nebraska produces its energy through a publicly controlled system. California was the first state where the deregulation process began, and this is quite clearly why it's a crisis, because if it fails in California, they're not going to be able to sell the deregulation idea to other states as well. But currently, 20 states are already in various phases of the deregulation process, and in every case they involve a so-called buyout or bailout of the utilities. So far it's estimated that $200 billion will be converted into private hands just at the level that it's going on now. Under regulation, utilities in California were publicly regulated. They owned their own dams. They owned their own generators and electrical grids. They were legally responsible to guarantee electricity. Prices were regulated, and profits could only equal 10% of the investment. Well, you can imagine what happened under deregulation. The first thing is that the utilities were all required to sell their generators to any buyer in any state. Then a market was created where electricity could be bought and sold and speculated upon. This was the power exchange. The result of this is that suddenly players throughout the country, including George Bush's pal from Enron in Houston, the largest energy provider and marketeer, started speculating on electricity. You couldn't really make money off of just guessing about electrical prices before the so-called deregulation, but now that's the name of the game. These guys call it gaming the market, and what they do is you buy electricity ahead of time, then you resell it. You can sell it anywhere and any time. So, for example, if on February the 15th I buy a block of electricity, say 100 kilowatts, to be used on September the 1st, the price is going to go up and down between them. If I find a time where I can make some money, then I can resell that block of electricity and pocket the difference, even though the electricity has never been produced yet. This is speculation. And in fact, in the old days where electricity would run from the dam through the wires into your toaster or your computer, nowadays every electron is bought and sold and speculated against dozens of times before it actually gets to your house. Under this kind of situation, it's completely legal to withhold electricity, and the deregulation meant that utilities no longer have to provide electricity. They can do with it what they want.
We're talking with Steve Miller, who is a science and education writer with the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. My name is Mike Thornton. This is People's Tribune Radio. Steve, when you're talking about how they're no longer obligated to provide electricity, the picture sort of went through my mind of farmers who have an overproduction of milk. And every so often we see in the news where farmers are dumping milk because they don't want to sell it because they're not going to make money off of it. And on some level, we're talking about the same thing here with electricity, correct? I mean, it's a way of keeping the price up.
They're definitely manipulating the market to keep the price up. It's no accident that this winter, which in California is the low period of production since California tends to be hot and people use so many air conditioners in the summer, that just as this crisis was happening, mysteriously all of these power producers were taken offline. Something like 25% of the power producers went offline just as the crisis hit. So they manipulate the local market, and the purpose is to just simply extract capital out of this. One of the things that occurred with deregulation was that Pacific Gas and Electric complained that they couldn't be competitive in the free market because they had past debts. These were past debts from mostly atomic power plants. So they got a bailout in 1996 of, if you add PG&E together and Consolidated Edison in Southern California, they got a $27 billion bailout. It could actually be more, but most of these things are kept secret from the public. At any rate, what did they do with their money? They went and bought up electrical capacity in Britain, Indonesia, Mexico. They spent $9 billion of this money not to pay off old debts, but to just so strengthen their position to be able to manipulate the international power market.
That's one of the interesting things that is really coming out about what's been happening behind the scenes with all of this. We recently spoke with a representative of Pacific Gas and Electric, John Tremaine, who joined us from California's Bay Area. And we asked him about some of this and the fact that while PG&E is claiming bankruptcy, this is actually a subsidiary of PG&E, And in fact, PG&E has a generating subsidiary that is selling power to PG&E, the distribution subsidiary, at usury rates. I mean, there's a lot of manipulation going on here on a lot of levels, correct?
Absolutely. I think that there's two key questions that everybody has to understand to be able to see through the propaganda that comes out daily in the newspaper about this. The first thing is the one that you pointed out, that under deregulation, PG&E set up a holding company. So you now have PG&E Corporation, which is an energy supplier, which owns PG&E Company, which is an energy buyer. So it's when you hear about PG&E going broke, or theoretically going broke, what you're hearing is that PG&E Company is going broke. These are the people who supposedly supply the energy to households. But PG&E Corporation, in the first three quarters of last year, had $753 million profit above their profit of 1999 for the same period of time. That was a 40% increase. During that exact same period, PG&E Company transferred $632 million from PG&E Corporation. Then PG&E Company says, well, we don't have any resources. We have to have a state bailout. So this is what we're seeing, are accounting games and just moving money from pocket to pocket in order to for the corporations to really extort more money out of the public.
And Southern California Edison, of course, is doing the same thing or similar actions. I understand that they transferred something like $5 billion to Edison International over the last 5 years, and they're also claiming that they're on the verge of bankruptcy.
Right. This is in fact, entirely legal, which is one of the real interesting things about this crisis. The other issue that people need to really grasp is that how is it exactly that a system that was functioning relatively efficiently suddenly began to verge on collapse? What we hear in the newspapers and Time Magazine, et cetera, is that there was too much demand, but this is the season of minimum demand. We also hear that California didn't build generation capacity for the last decade. But interestingly enough, the county of Los Angeles does not have an electrical crisis at this point. Los Angeles is the nation's second largest industrial area, but they have a publicly owned utility system, and they, and along with the other 27 smaller publicly owned systems across the state, have no crisis at all. Those customers are not being charged 300% and 400% increases for their electricity. In fact, Los Angeles has been talking about cutting rates. So you can see that it isn't the investment issue, but it's the way that the market and the technological side of things is being reconfigured to generate profit for these corporations.
We're talking about the so-called electricity crisis with Steve Miller, science and education writer for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. My name is Mike Thornton, and this is PTR. You know, Steve, there are so many games being played that sometimes it's hard to keep track of all of them. Now, we've recently had California Governor Gray Davis is talking about having $10 billion in bonds and that the state is going to become the power buyer. But yet it almost sounds like they're going to act as some sort of middleman for PG&E and Southern California Edison. And so what we wind up having is a continued transfer of public monies into private hands. I mean, that's what this is really all about, right?
Absolutely. We're just privatizing the systems that were built with public and taxpayer money throughout the earlier part of the 20th century. One of the things that has come out, it's kind of humorous in this whole process, is that one of the architects of this $10 billion buyout is Credit Suisse First Boston. This is a Boston financial organization that is getting into the electrical market. These guys actually are drafting the legislation itself that has been used to craft this $10 billion bailout. But these guys naturally don't want their creditors to be disturbed, so they actually put on their website last week in the first part of February this quote, "The rolling blackouts in California are more likely to soften up the legislature and the voters to the need for a rate increase than are indicative of a permanent when the lights went out in California scenario." So the truth is actually being published in little scattered bits and pieces, but it's quite clear even today, the day after that this bailout became law, papers are quite clear that the whole purpose of this is to guarantee the credit rating of PG&E so that their stock increases in value. That's the explicit statements that these people say. So you can see that, as you said, the whole name of the game here is simply privatizing public assets. And we are actually watching one of the largest transfers of wealth in the history of the world from public hands into private hands.
It seems to me that when we begin to sort of extrapolate the future from what we're seeing now, that we're really, whether we're talking about electricity or clean water, food, even breathable oxygen, that we're actually working our way towards a place where all of these things are for sale by private profiteers.
Absolutely. This is what globalization is all about. This is, they're explicitly state this. They're not trying to hide this from anybody, but they don't bother to put it on the 5 o'clock news either. Now that the electronic technology exists to begin to really coordinate all the infrastructure systems around the world, most of which were built with public money and taxpayer money, they intend to take these over and then to use them for speculative purposes. The use is not, the primary goal is not to produce any electricity. The primary goal is to produce capital so that they can reward their stock owners.
We're talking with Steve Miller, science writer for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Steve, you know, you've said a phrase a couple of times in our discussion, and that is that these systems were developed by public financing, which means, of course, the tax money of the people of this country. And so many of these systems, whether they be highways or electrical grids or many of the, you know, the inventions that have made society better in some ways, or at least we'd like to hope so, are more often than not created, researched, developed through public funds and publicly funded universities and organizations, and more of them are being taken into private hands.
Absolutely. Early in this century, when the capacity to first generate electricity and move water long distances and the things that actually sustained the development of cities, when this occurred, the public became very interested in controlling the essential resources of society. People recognized that it was just not fair to allow the robber barons of that era to absolutely hold a city hostage to water or sewage or electricity or anything like this. Consequently, you had a large movement to regulate this kind of ownership. It wasn't that it was always public, but the private concerns were regulated. And this was done under the aegis of public utilities. Public utilities are a virtually a century-old tradition in the United States to control all of the things that are becoming privatized. This movement culminated in FDR getting elected president. As soon as he got elected president, he made the statement that the people have the undeniable right to set up government-owned and operated utility services to prevent extortion against the public. FDR very quickly passed a law called the Public Utilities Holding Company Act. He created the TVA and the Rural Electrification Administration, which brought electricity to the rural areas of the United States. Firstly, the TVA and the Rural Electricity Administration are targets for privatization once the dust settles in California. And the electricity corporations, the marketeers, the middlemen, and the speculators have quite publicly declared that the Public Utilities Holding Company Act is something that has to be gotten rid of. If you want another perspective on this, the director of the University of California Energy Institute, Severin Bernstein, says, "This is the reality of how markets work. If a company does not exercise its market power by selling high at peak times, shareholders should be suing them because there's money to be made. Suppliers have the right and, if they are public companies, the duty to charge the most they can for their product." So you can see that when corporations control essential resources that humans need to survive, their goal is to make a profit off of it, whereas if these were controlled by the public, then the taxpayers and the public itself would set their goals ahead of making a profit.
We're talking with Steve Miller, science and education writer for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. My name is Mike Thornton, and this is People's Tribune Radio. Steve, I guess we kind of get to the final point here, and I guess it's a twofold question. One, what do we really need to do here? And I guess the other thing is that there really comes a point where society has to make a decision, and that decision is, are we going to allow the capitalist free market to become the final arbiter of what is right and good for society, or do we have to take a different path than the road it seems that we're on?
Absolutely. There's a couple of lessons I think that we have to draw. First of all, we're not talking about greed. Greed is an individual expression of avarice. We are talking about a legal system that is designed to allow corporations to maximize their profits. We may find, you know, when everything settles in California, there's been some insider trading and stuff like this. But essentially what's been done is completely and absolutely legal, which raises the question of the existence of that those kind of laws themselves. It's really untenable to allow people to make profits by withholding essential resources to other human beings. I mean, we see the same debate over and over in society. The HMOs withhold medical treatment for people, and it's completely legal. But the human beings themselves are suffering tremendously, unless they happen to be the millionaires who can afford to go to buy things privately in the same sense. So people have to really consider, since it is legal, attacking the very foundations of this. I mean, it's completely nonsensical if we're putting the benefit of humanity first to allow corporations to simply maraud and privatize and extort money from the public. Another thing that I think is important to understand is that energy is not scarce. It's been configured, and its distribution has been configured technologically in order to guarantee a profit, not in order to guarantee the satisfaction of the needs of the public. For many fundamental technological and financial reasons, it's much cheaper to provide energy from a given dam to a regular set of customers, and that's the end of it. Even Cuba, which is an energy-poor country, the people there pay about $1.25 a month for their energy bills. They pay another $1.25 for the telephone. So it can be reconfigured in a better way, but energy itself is abundant. The sun shines on California every day. The Power Light Company of Berkeley, which is promotes solar panels, estimates that one-third of California's electricity needs could come from solar panels just put on the tops of commercial buildings, not even put on private homes. We're watching the slow development of power cell technology, where water basically produces energy that's completely abundant, but this is being highly restricted because the automobile industry is wedded to a gas technology, which is highly inefficient. So we have other options. We have other ways of doing things, but it really comes down to a question of power and whether we are going to continue to allow these corporations the legal rights to do whatever they want to do. If anybody wants to check out what's really going on, there's a couple of websites that they should look at. One is www.consumerwatchdog.org, and the other one is www.turn.org. turn.org. That's T-U-R-N. These are consumer organizations that have been watching the utilities and predicted this back when deregulation took place. So you can get this straight information from these sites.
Steve Miller, science writer for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Here's an editorial from the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo.
International Women's Day was established on March 8, 1910, to commemorate the historic struggle to improve the quality of lives for all women. The women, garment, and textile workers who took to the streets protesting their working conditions inspired many women of today to continue the fight for economic equality. In the 20th century, women fought for equal-paying jobs and equal opportunity, and that struggle continues. But there's also a bigger problem and a bigger battle that women must fight against today, and that's the reality of poverty. In the United States, of those in poverty, 57% are women. Can we really win women's equality economically and socially without taking up the issue of poverty? Shouldn't we fight as a class and gather our own powerful forces to fight the real enemy that is creating poverty? Under a capitalist system, women will never be liberated. It's not in the interest of the ruling capitalist class to create equality among women or men. It's not in their interest to ensure the well-being of our children. And it's definitely not in their interest to save the poor who have been left without monthly incomes because another U.S. company has decided to relocate. So where do we, as a struggling class of working people, stand on their agenda? Well, one thing is for sure. We can either stand alone or we can stand together. We can unite on the reality that capitalism as a system needs to be replaced by a society based on cooperation. The 21st century and the advanced technology that continues to be developed offers tremendous possibilities for a cooperative society to exist. The possibilities to end world hunger, the possibilities for real equality, a cooperative society that allows for all men, women, and children to share in its abundance is at our reach. As a class of human beings that's being destroyed by an immoral system, women, men, fathers, and mothers of the future must unite on the basis of true freedom. We need to fight together to build a world where our children are educated, are fed, and are healthy. Those basic necessities that we all long for are all available. Our struggle needs to begin with understanding the real nature of poverty and confront its immorality by using the love that we have for humanity as our strongest weapon.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.